Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Yordana Azban, here with my friend, Chavruta Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechta Bava Kamma, daf Ayin Gimel, page 73. Well, we're still continuing our discussion about Edim Zomimim, and I'm going to get to an interesting opinion, which is Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Rabbi Yossi, it seems to say, and I'm kind of going to start reading, you know, in the middle of the discussion about him, that we really have two separate testimonies in this case of theft and, you know, slaughter or theft and selling, right? The question was, does it have to be one set of witnesses who say, hey, that guy stole and then also, you know, sold the animal or slaughtered the animal? Or is it that you have one set of witnesses who say he stole the animal and one set of witnesses who says he either sold or slaughtered the animal? And Rabbi Yossi basically says that you can actually make a distinction between the two sets of witnesses and say that you actually have two different sets of witnesses. So the Gemara wants to, you know, try to understand that a little bit more. My b'shtei ediyot. Okay, now what did Rabbi Yossi mean when he says you could have two sets of witnesses? Umay be'edut achat. And what does he mean when he says one set of witnesses? If you will say the two sets of witnesses, right, what does it mean? It means literally two sets of witnesses. Bishtei kitot, meaning two different groups of witnesses. One testifies about the theft, one testifies about the slaughter. Be'edut achat, and one set of witnesses mean kivat achad kaza achadzen, a single group of witnesses who testify to both crimes, right? They testify both to the theft and to the slaughter, right? So it's one after the other, right? V'amar Rabbi Yossi be'idud achad kivat achad bazeh acher zeh. If so, then Rabbi Yossi is saying if there's only one set of witnesses, a single group of witnesses testifying to both the theft and the slaughter, which basically, but you have to testify to each. So it's sort of like they're giving two testimonies. So it's one testimony after the other. So when they testify to the theft, and later they testify to the slaughter. When they are rendered zomimim on the slaughter, then we would have to say that their testimony, which was partially invalidated, becomes totally invalidated. And we have to say they are also zomimim for the theft as well, right? Mehecha teiti ach. But this cannot be, for what is the basis of saying this? So in other words, as we have this discussion about edim zomimim, right? Part of what comes out here is that if you have Rabbi Yossi's opinion that you could either have, it's two separate witnesses, it's sets of witnesses, fine. We can put that opinion there. But if it's like one after the other, in other words, first they testify about the theft and then they testify about the slaughter, and what their zomimim according to Rabbi Yossi is the slaughter part. But since it's one testimony, the theft testimony needs to be invalidated, and therefore the whole testimony is invalidated. So the Gemara is going to explain Rabbi Yossi's statement differently. Ela la b'shtei ediyot. Rather, when Rabbi Yossi speaks of two sets of witnesses, right? What is he talking about? Be'edut achad ka'ayin shtei ediyot. One set of witnesses like two sets. Umay ninhu. And what is that? Kat echad bazeh acher. One group of witnesses testifies about the theft and the slaughter, right? With one testimony coming after each other two different times. So what Rabbi Yossi is saying is that they're found to be zomimim about the slaughter, right? But their earlier testimony about the theft is valid because they did it totally separately. Aval be'edut achat, kivat achat lo. But if there's only one set of witnesses, meaning they testify at the same time about the theft and the slaughter, then yes, they would be zomimim about everything. So Rabbi Yossi's opinion only works if what we say is that it's that they testified about the theft, some period of time passes, then they testify about the slaughter. So it was really two separate testimonies, even though it was the same set of witnesses, right? So essentially, what the Gemara basically figures out is that this machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and the rabbis about this case where you have a set of witnesses who testify about the theft and the slaughter at the same time, okay? That's really what the machlokas has to be over. And then the Gemara is going to go back, and after that, they're going to sort of try to put that into the machlokas between Rabba Abaye and Rabba that we see basically being discussed here on this page. So once they've reestablished what this correct machlokas is between the rabbis and Rabbi Yossi, right? Because they wanted to use this as an example that actually this machlokas of Abaye and Rabba you can actually find in the Tanaim. Then from there, they're going to go back and sort of re-examine the opinions of Abaye and Rabba. Remember that, you know, Abaye, you know, sort of at what point do they actually become Edim Zomimim? So we're going to sort of take the Tanaitic machlokas and then try to fit it into the Amoraic machlokas.
Yeah. I think it's complicated stuff in terms of determining, you know, when we have this machloka between Abaye and Rava, and it's already been presented before you get to, you know, Rabbi Yossi and his cohort type of dispute, lining it up again, I feel like it takes a little bit of a chart to say, okay, these are the generations. And frankly, Yerdan, I think we would recommend that anybody, you know, kind of store up in their memories who's what generation, at least in swaths of people, you know, who's a Tana, who's an early Amora, who's a middle Amora, who's a late Amora.
But that's a common thing the Gemara does. Like we had a Mishnah yesterday, it goes straight to a machlokas of Amurayim, and then it says, okay, let's backtrack, right? Yes, the Gemara is written in the time of the Amurayim. Can we kick it up a notch and say, actually, this is the machlokas of the Tanaim? That is like a classic Gemara method.
Right. But at some point it makes your head spin because you're like, if you're paying attention to things like who lived when, because it feels like they're jumping around the centuries because they are. And that's why for the people who learn ahistorically, right? Meaning without worrying about who lived in what generation. And sometimes that's a smoother way to look at it because it's not about generations and who said what when, but just who said what at all.
Well, and everyone knows who's been learning with us long enough, I love the history part of it. I mean, you do too, Anne.
Right.
The Gemara is actually not interested in chronology. When they present these opinions, yes, they care that it's an Amora versus a Tana, but they bring that in the discussion just to say like, hey, this is actually an older machlokas. It's not a newer machlokas.
Right. And sometimes they want to see who lines up with whom, right? What views, what sages' views line up with other sages?
I think the reason why they do that, where they have the Machlokas Amoraim, and then they say like, hey, can we find Tanaim, is I think it's a way of saying that the Machlokas is actually part of our Misora. Remember, the Gemara is not scared of Machlokas. It embraces Machlokas. It likes to present other opinions. It doesn't want to say that there's something monolithic. Not everybody agrees. So when you can say, oh, this wasn't just a machlokas of the Amoraim, it goes farther back to the Tanaim, it deepens the machlokas in a way that the Gemara really respects.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. Okay, I'm going to jump, speaking of generations, I'm going to jump generations onto the next daf with Rava. About halfway through, maybe a little less than halfway through, we have Amar Rava, Edim Shehu Chashu, Ulabasof Huzmu, Nehergin. We have people who are witness to a crime, but they're witness to a capital crime, right? This is the kind of crime that if you are an Eid Zomim, if you're plotting witness against the potential alleged, what we want to call it, the person who's done this, right? And then you're going to end up doing, you're going to get done to you what you were trying to do to them. Well, if you come and testify against somebody in a capital crime for which, for example, there might be a death sentence, then the concern, of course, is that the death sentence comes back onto you. So what happens? The witnesses to this crime, they first, shahuk chashu, they have been contradicted by two other witnesses, right? And contradictory testimony is not at all the same thing as conspiracy testimony, right? Contradictory means one person saw it from one angle, another person saw it from another angle, another person, you know, didn't remember the time of day well enough, right? The testimony itself isn't, if you bring enough witnesses, the odds on finding some measure of contradictory testimony is very, very high, because people don't remember all the details, or they can concoct some details, not intentionally. I mean, just by virtue of the high pressure tense situation, right? So in this case then, so we have the witnesses who, again, they first were contradicted by two other witnesses, and then eventually they are considered to be zomamim, that they were considered to be conspiracy, conspiring witnesses. Dachashat chilat hazamahi. Ella Shalodin Mara says the claim here is that kind of contradictory testimony is just the beginning of conspiring testimony. The idea that if you're willing to, you know, be unsure, so to speak, so that you end up with, you know, you testify to a degree that is enough to end up with a contradiction. And if, let's say, you know, you get caught on that, then the question of how do you become a conspiring witness. The idea is basically that because they were already involved in this case, right, their testimony is disqualified as Edim Zoma, Edim contradictory witnesses, right? Edim Shok Chashu, where the testimony is contradictory to the degree that it's thrown out. So then you don't even have to know that they're ever going to be conspiracy witnesses. But then if you discover that there's conspiracy witnesses, now you might have a whole different case on your hands, because they were plotting to do something and they're supposed to be judged accordingly. So the Gemara here says, right, that they get killed. Why? Dachasha Trilat Hazamahi. Because that kind of contradiction is the very beginning of kind of delving in, right, to the greater degree. Ela shelo nigmara. But the fact is, what happens is that the testimony is not completed. So you have the contradiction, but because the testimony wasn't fully given, then there's more room both for them to, you know, kind of stop and go free, or to get caught up in it and end up being conspiring witnesses who may have, in fact, a death sentence. But Gemara goes on. Amar Rava, mana amina la. Why? It's kind of funny. Rava's talking to Rava, right? He says, why? From where do I say this, right? How do I know this? So he brings the Tanya, he brings a Breita from the Tosefta. I guess it's a Tosefta, not a Breita, but fine. And it's from Masachet Makot, which we've already mentioned. Meidani ba'ish ploni shesime et ayin et ein avdo. Right, the witnesses come and they say, we're testifying that so and so blinded his Canaanite slave, which he had the right to do. Let's say, whether you like it or not, he might have had the right to do it. Vehipil et shino, and then afterwards he knocked out his tooth. Maybe he has the right to do that, but that sounds much less pleasant, right? In terms, and then also he's going to have to pay compensation for this damage. Sharei harab omer kain, benim se'uzum amin, mishal min demei ein la'ayin la'evet. So what happens? If all of this is, you know, in effect, and they're going to pay compensation, they're going to rush to take care of him, and then it turns out that they were found to be conspiring witnesses, einim zomamin, they are the ones who have to actually pay the value of the to the slave, right? Meaning we don't say we're going to come back and do for them what they, you know, let me say carefully, there's a degree to which we expect the exact thing that they were conspiring to result upon the witness that they're, or the person that they're knocking. We would expect it to be exact. And then every so often you see, you know, these cases where you say, yes, but we're not going to blind them. We're just going to charge them, kind of thing, as an example. Namely, the question of how much do they have to pay? Do they pay the value of the entire slave, or simply the, you know, potential for loss of the specifics in each case? Okay, I'm going to stop here. The Gemara obviously continues, and it gets more into the, I'm going to say, the body work, right? What happens if a slave, different parts of the slave end up being the subject of injury, and, you know, then what happens in that case of the testimony against that slave? What happens to those witnesses if, in fact, they are conspiring?
You know, this is one of these sets of dapim where it's like we're getting a taste of something that I know in the future we're going to do a much more deep dive on. But, you know, the Gemara here is spending a lot of time on, like you said before, like we're going to get to all this when we get to Makot.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's interesting that it's here in the discussion of the thief, right? I mean, it's just the focal point here, and like we shifted now to the witnesses, but it began with the perpetrator that they are testifying about.
Yes. Yes. No, no, no. It's super interesting how they get here. Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rankus, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.